And good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to a matinee edition of We've Got Next. I'm Ricky Hampton, the former Milwaukee Bucks center, Paul Mokeski, coming to you on a Monday afternoon, special edition. Big Mo, it's good to see you, brother.
Can't believe you got a sweater on, man. It's like 80 degrees here. It can't be snowing there, can it?
Man, it is snowing in Detroit. May 1st, we got snow, not just today, but tomorrow.
That's crazy.
But you know what? I still got 9 holes in this morning.
What was the temperature?
It's, it's got to be in the 30s, right? We got snow. It's not sticking.
What was it this morning, though?
Oh, well, we teed off?
Yeah.
Probably about 36, 37.
You better hit it pure or your hands hurt, right?
But you know, my golf league starts this weekend, man. You got to get it in. You got to get to work in. Hey, we got work to do. So we were out on the course this morning. And before I get into all that, man, let's be sure to welcome our viewers in who are watching us on We Got Next live on Facebook, on the African American Athlete. And on YouTube, we appreciate you guys checking in. Love to hear your questions and comments. And Mo, man, we got a lot to talk about. I really couldn't wait for the show to start. I'm actually excited that we started early. I don't know if I made it to 9 o'clock because a lot of stuff I want to run by you. Probably starting with Steph Curry's performance yesterday, and he literally willed the Golden State Warriors to a Game 7 victory over Sacramento.
Sacramento had a home court, Game 7. Place was going crazy. It was loud. The first half was a battle back and forth, ties, but nobody could go up more than 5 points. And I was sitting in my house telling my wife, Linda, don't let Golden State get up by more than 10 because this will be over. And that's what happened. But, in the first half, to me, it looked like they were just the Warriors, besides Steph Curry, were working underwater. I mean, Klay Thompson was 1 for 10, I think. Poole looked like he was trying to force everything and show that he's worth that $140 million. Andrew Wiggins was a turnover machine. It was just a bad, bad first half. And I know going into halftime, I've told you this before, if you're a coach and, I don't know what it was. It was tied or it was really close in halftime. But if I'm the Golden State Warriors, I'm saying, listen, we can't play much worse than this. Steph, you're carrying us. That's great. But it's going to turn around in the second half. And not only did Steph turn it on, I mean, he was unconscious, but Klay hit a couple key threes, Poole making a couple of good drives, and Looney, we talk about this a lot, Ricky, how everybody knows their rules, roles, but a lot of people don't accept them. Yeah. Well, Looney is a perfect example of a guy who sees where he fits in. He needs rebounding, toughness in the paint, getting offensive rebounds and putbacks. That's all they need, and that's all he does to the point of 20-plus rebounds for 3 games in the series and showing his value. Hello, young players out there. You don't have to score 25 points to impact a game. Looney impacted that game. He impacted that series, in my opinion. But, I had the Golden State Warriors to start the series. It got a little shaky. I've been texting Steve Kerr back and forth, congratulated him on a great series win. And now a little short rest before they go in and play the Lakers. But, Golden State, is making a push. This is probably the last dance for this group, right? I mean, Draymond's talking about leaving. Curry's getting older. Everybody's getting older, and this is probably their last push. And a team as offensively talented as they are, when you put that on the board and this is our last push and everybody knows it, that can get you past some series, including a 7-game tough game at least for the first three quarters in Sacramento till Golden State ran away with it.
This is what I wanted to ask you. One, as a former player, 12 years in the league, years coaching, scouting, when you see a performance like that, what goes through your mind? Number one, and you are, not only did you play, you are a fan of basketball. You're a basketball fan. How do you look at it that way? And number three, when a guy gets going like that, from a coaching standpoint, is there anything that can be done? Are you at their mercy? Break those three things down for me, Mo.
Well, at their level, we'll go backwards on that. Is there something you could do? Sure. But, I mean, I played against some of the greats, you know, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, some guy named Michael Jordan, that once when they get going, you know, it's hard to stop. However, as a coach and a coaching staff, you need to have some plans because you know it's a matter of time before that happens with someone like Steph Curry. So you got to trap him. You got to get the ball out of his hands. You got to knock him down every once in a while, legally, and try not to get a flagrant one. But if you get a flagrant one, that's okay. Flagrant two is not. But you got to disrupt him. You can't have the same people. That's what the Bucks did wrong in their series against Miami. You know, Butler was going off. You know, and they kept the same guys on. I'm sure Holiday's a great defender, but you need to change it up. Offensive players like routine. If they know who's guarding them, they know how they can attack that certain person. Put somebody else on them. You know, that's what you have to do. Trap them every once in a while. Maybe play a little zone, maybe. You got to shake it up and do something different. Because if you're going to sit back there and watch someone like that or, you know, someone like Curry or Butler or guys at that level just do their thing, you're not, in my opinion, you're not coaching enough. Sure. Let's take the Golden State series, right? Because I hear people talking about you need to double-team Curry, take it out of his hands, which you do at some times. But is it scary for a coach? Yeah, because guess who he's going to pass it to? Klay Thompson, you know, shooting a three, or Andrew Wiggins driving and dunking. Or, yeah, of course it's scary, but is it more scary to watch him go off for 50 and win the game? You know, so, you know, it's a give and take. And as a coaching staff, you got to have a feel for, okay, maybe in a timeout when he's starting to go off, okay, for the next 3 minutes, whenever Curry comes off a pick and roll, we're going to trap him and get the ball out of his hands and rotate. Hard, fast rotation to Klay, slower rotation to Poole and Wiggins. And you have to practice that, and that's in your scouting report. So, you know, but at the bottom line, I mean, you talk about Embiid, Joker, Giannis, those guys, those MVPs, they're all big guys. They can all score 50 points. But, you know, Curry, to me, is harder to guard than all those guys because he gets to the basket. You saw it right there, an N1 flip shot. He does it. He shot a, I think this is it maybe. No, but after this, he shot a running hook shot in the paint.
Yeah.
I mean, and, you know, we're not talking about just his three-point shots, which are phenomenal and deep as you want. And you think you got him guarded, but you don't. And, you know, this is the hook shot. Watch this. That's a running hook shot. Come on, man. So, you know, it's so hard to guard. And Lakers going to have to come up. Darvin Ham and his staff are going to have to come up with certain schemes to throw him off his game when he gets rolling like this.
Now, as a fan, just you love basketball just like we do.
Yeah, I mean, like that play right there, you know Steph can shoot deep and shoot threes, but he can put up a defender on skates, and there's a little pull-up mid-range that we love. You can get to the basket. And he had, you know who he reminds me of? Probably at a different level, but people might think I'm crazy, but I watch him up close and personal. Steve Nash. Steve Nash could shoot threes. He could get to the basket and have those little flip shots. He was a really good passer. He had a pull-up game. You know, he would taunt players by putting the ball right in front of them and they couldn't touch it and he'd flip it in. So he reminds me a lot of Steve Nash 2.0. He's fun to watch. Like right there, he's looking at that double team. He splits it and then he does a step back three. Come on, man.
And that guy's on him is 6'8".
He's on him as much as you can without fouling him. He might even foul him. I don't know.
It looked like he fouled him, right?
Yeah. you know. But I mean, you can't guard him any better than that. So, you know, that's why you got to get it. At some points in this series, the Lakers going to have to get it out of his hands somehow, you know.
I mean, he just threw that in with one hand.
like it's a warm-up layup, right?
Right.
And he's always have his cool. And he's, people don't know this, but I know because I play golf with him and against him. And you know, I do his dad in Charlotte and got to know him. He's one of the most competitive guys. Here, that play, though, right there, how can you lose a guy that has 50 on an out-of-bounds play? That's a travesty that that player would lose him, and an out of bounds with 1.6 left to shoot a three. That was a joke right there. But you know, Steph is one of the most competitive guys on the golf course, off the golf course, and definitely on the court. You know, and with his skill level, you get competitiveness, a will to work, and a drive to win, and you got problems if you're guarding, if you're on the other team.
Hey, our man Chris Ramsey's checking in. What's up, Chris?
Hey, Chris.
How you doing, brother? Chris has a question. Hold on. Let's get this in here. Hey, Paul, Klay Thompson's foot injury, is that what slows him down, you think?
Well, I think it slows him down defensively because, as we know, at least before the last injury, and he's had some major injuries, that Klay Thompson was one of the best wing defenders in the league. He's known as one of the, and I think his foot is probably still bothering him. And remember, we talked about being injured and being hurt. Everyone's injured, and you got to decide if you can play or not. And Klay has decided that. So I think it really hurts him on the defensive end, being able to stop players. But I think you're right a little bit, Klay, because, you know, if you're a jump shooter, the jump shot starts from the feet up. It starts from the feet up. With footwork and balance, and goes through your legs and goes through your body and your upper body and then your shoulders and then your release. So if he's having a foot problem, that will affect him. But I don't, he missed wide open shots in the first half, and I don't think that has anything to do with the foot. I don't know if he was in a funk or whatever, but you know, he's gonna have to come out of it for the Lakers series. I know that.
And like you said, Mo, this is an older team. He's not the, you know, Klay's not quite the player he was before that injury. And, you know, he missed a lot of time older. And that's why I totally agree that the Warriors, as you know it, this might be it for them, this run that they're on this time.
Yeah, I guarantee after that game, Curry, Klay, Draymond, Looney all had ice wrapped around their whole body on their flight back or bus ride back. Because even falling down by an accident like Curry did, when you get older, that's going to hurt you. The good news for them is the Lakers are about as old and injury prone as they are. So it's going to be an interesting series.
And you know, a shout out to Sacramento. Hadn't been in the playoffs in 20 years. It looked like the inexperience showed a little bit. To Paul, but all in all, it was a great run for them, a great year for them.
It gives them encouragement. They have young players, they have a great coach, so it gives them encouragement. And also, you know, back when we, you know, the Pistons had to learn how to beat the Celtics, and the Bulls had to learn how to beat the Pistons, and you know, that's kind of, you know, that took a few years of failures and losses and series. And you got to, it's a learning process. Everything's not automatic now as much as the players want to make it so, because they move around so damn much. They try to chase a ring. But if you do it in a regular process, it's a growing. And not only is it is physically, but it's experience and it's a knowledge and, you know, they're playing in a game seven against former world champions, so that puts a lot of pressure. The crowd was great, but, you know, in the long run, absolutely, Ricky, their inexperience showed. And guess who said that at the beginning of the series? Me.
Big Mo. Big Mo knows. Hey, Mo, before we get into and we're going to touch on all these series, folks. But I do want to go back with your connections with the Bucks and how that whole thing turned out as the number one seed being upset by Miami. And Miami's not your typical eight seed. I think you would agree with that. But still, there's no doubt in my mind that Milwaukee was the better team. But Jimmy Butler just went off on these guys. Talk about that series. And you know, the injury to Giannis cost him a couple of games. But your thoughts on the Bucks and or maybe not, I see. Your thoughts on that series, then we'll go forward.
Well, I think, first of all, this year, seedings meant nothing. I mean, the Suns aren't a four seed, and the Clippers aren't a fifth seed. The Lakers aren't a seventh seed, and the Golden State Warriors aren't a sixth seed. So the seeding, Miami has a good team. They've been there before. They struggled during the season, but they're no schlubs, you know. So, you know, the upset is not as big as people think, even though it looks like it. It's not as big as people think, you know.
Staggering in Miami.
You know, your seeds don't mean much this season, except in the East, maybe. So kind of take that out of the equation. But in my opinion, the roster that the Bucks have had this year should be good enough and talented enough to beat the Miami Heat, even without Giannis. So that's my opinion. And, you know, obviously they're a different team with Giannis, but also it's a different dynamic because he takes so many shots and handles the ball a lot. But, you know, Jimmy Butler stepped up huge and, you know, willed Miami to win that series. But, you know, Bam Adebayo. Yeah. I mean, he had a great series. I mean, double doubles and 25 points and 12 rebounds. And he had a great series. And, you know, Tyler Hero got hurt, and Duncan Robinson stepped up and did a great job. Shoot, in the last game, Lowry stepped up and had 18 points. We forgot he's still on that team. So, you know, Miami's not a bad team. The Bucks should have beat them. I think they let themselves down, you know, losing games at home. And the fall apart in the fourth quarter of that last game was an embarrassment to the Bucks organization and the players and coaches on that team. To have a 16-point lead at home, fall apart, look like you're a freaking JUCO team at the end of that thing. No one wants to handle the ball. No one wants to shoot the ball. Not even get a shot off to tie the game up. And let them tie it up on a junior high play at the end. You know, that the way that ended, you know, people are going to win series and lose series and move on and all that. And Giannis says, it's not a failure. Yeah, but when you lose a game in a series that way, it is. Sorry, it is.
But do they need to add to that roster, or is it just
they're going to need to tweak the roster, and they're going to possibly have to look at a coaching change because, you know, I hate to say this, but at some point, you know, teams do need a different voice in the locker room. I used to hate that when I was coaching. You know, I've been fired, I've been hired. But at this point, for them to lose like they lost, it's a glaring red flag to me if I'm an owner. Let's face it, Giannis, is looking at his future. So they have to either tweak the roster and maybe the coaching staff and help people held accountable. And I'm going to call him out. Giannis needs to work on his game. Giannis is a former MVP of the league, but he has so many weaknesses in his game. He needs to spend this summer working on his game, not going playing for Greece with his brothers, not doing that. He needs to work on his free throws. I think he missed 12, 14. I don't know how many missed the last game. I mean, you know, you got to work on your free throws. Have someone actually work with you and get a cleaner routine, because the routine free throws are about routine and consistency. You need to do that. You need to get a better pull-up game so you're not charging in there all the time. You can actually save yourself injuries and bumps and bruises if you can pull up and make a shot. You have to work on your three-point shot because it's 20-whatever percent, so inconsistent. And you got to work on your passing when guys are on you. So if I was working with them in the summer, number one, we're going to work on free throws. We're going to work on your pull-up game. And then we're going to work on you going to the basket where I got another 7-foot guy that's athletic on you. I got a coach with a pad hitting you on the arm. And then I'm going to have you see if you can find players that you can kick out to. But, I mean, that's one point.
And he's talented enough to improve in those areas.
No question. But here's the point. I mean, I love his competitiveness. I love that he stayed in Milwaukee instead of jumping ship and going somewhere else. I love that he said, instead of moving around, I want to win with the guys we have. That's awesome. But guess what, Giannis? You got to work on your own game. I mean, Butler took you apart. You were hurt, whatever. But your game is limited. Everyone can see it. Maybe people are afraid to tell you that. But and it's not shameful. I mean, when I was in the league, Michael Jordan was a driver, penetrator, slasher, turned into a very good shooter, and then he turned into a low post guy, right? So he worked on his game all through his career. You need to look at doing that.
Yeah. I hear that. I hear that. And I think about Budenholzer's job is on the line now. He won the title 2 years ago.
Which as we know, means nothing.
I was going to say.
Because
Nick Nurse won 3 years ago. He got the boot.
It means nothing. Coach of the Year means nothing. It's what you do. What have you done for me lately, and what can you do for me in the future? And I'm sorry. And I know our hearts are out to him because his brother passed away after the game before that in a car accident. And, his mind was somewhere else. And, we understand that. Then damn it, assistant coaches step up and help him out. And, to come out and not call a timeout with 8 seconds left, and we talk about that. You got the rebound. Giannis has it in his hands. Great. Let him see if he can create, get to the rim. But if not, you still got 4 or 5 seconds. Call timeout. And his system should have helped him with that. And, those kind of mistakes, no matter what the circumstance off the court, you can't get past. It's going to be interesting to see what – and they have new ownership, by the way. The Bucks have brand new ownership. So we're going to see what happens. The way they lost in the first round – it would be really not very, very educated for people to think they're not going to make any moves. Well, they got a great coach, one of the top coaches. Great. They have really roster. They won a championship years ago. Great. They have one of the best players. Great. But to not make the way you lost and with new ownership, there is going to be moves made, probably in the roster and with the coaching staff.
Hey, Paul, when you hear people say that all the time. The coach has lost his voice. Chuck Daly was a great coach here in Detroit, won 2 championships. He left on his own. He said, they don't listen to me anymore. Larry Brown left. Larry Brown always leaves.
Yeah, Larry Brown always leaves. Take him out.
He kind of said the same thing. Is that true? And why is that not the case in college? Because the guys leave?
Well, guys – just look at
the guys are leaving college now too.
Just look at the transfer portal. There's 2,000 players in there, so that's not true anymore. It used to be true because, like I've said before, in college the head coach is the face of the program. The head coach has all the power. The head coach makes the decisions about scholarships and who plays. The head coach is the man. In the NBA, the head coach is not the man. The head coach does not make most of the decisions. The head coach doesn't put the roster together. And all the players all the star players in the NBA teams have more power than the head coach in the NBA. That's the truth. I mean, you don't think if Giannis went to the ownership today and said, listen, we need all new coaches, that within a week there'd be all new coaches? Of course they would. And I would say the same with Holiday. I would say the same with Middleton. Not with Lopez, maybe, but maybe. I mean, that's just the fact. You don't think if Steph Curry went to the ownership and said, hey, we can't play for Steve Kerr anymore, that they wouldn't fire Steve Kerr? Of course they would. That's just the fact. I'm not saying that would ever happen, but that's the way the NBA is now. And when you've been with a team, I don't know how long Budenholzer has been there, probably 8 years maybe, 6, 8.
I'll look it up.
Yeah, but if you're with a team for 5, 6, 8 years, through good, bad times and good times and championships. But there's all these practices and meetings and video sessions and airplane rides and games and locker room conversations and locker room talks. And all those sometimes add up. at some point, some players are going to say, I don't want to hear this anymore. You know, at least not from you. Sometimes that happens. It's just the nature of the game. I don't know if that's happened for sure, but from looking at the way they played in that series and the way they lost, you know, I would say if I was a betting man, I'd say that's probably what's happening.
Mike got there in 2018. So that's 6 years.
6 years. So and if you talk to coaches like that around the 5 or 6 year mark, that's where it starts happening.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's a good coach.
He's a great coach. He's not a good coach. He's a great coach. Yeah. But you have to be, like I said a long time ago, when I have training camp and I bring all the players in, say I have 18 players, I got 12 spots. I say, I'm not looking for the 12 best players. Sorry, I'm not looking for the 12 best players. I'm looking for the 12 players that make up the best team and gives us a chance to win. That's what I'm looking for. I'm gonna cut some of you that are better players than others because the others fit in more, right? The same with a coach. You're not great coaches, you know, that lose their voice or just don't fit anymore. It doesn't mean they're not great coaches. They're great coaches. Maybe not for this team at this point.
It is really fascinating to, you know, to get all this behind the scenes information from you, Mo, on how this game works. You know, because for so many fans, they just see the game when it comes on TV tonight. They'll watch the game, but there's a whole other world that is existing behind there to get that roster and lineup out to center court for that jump ball with a, you know, to have a chance to win that game that night.
You know the old tip of the iceberg, right? You only see 10% of the iceberg above the water. All the rest is under the water. Yeah. It's the same with basketball. The game that they're going to play tonight is only the 10% of what the scouting reports that went together, the practices, the video sessions, the trainers trying to get players ready. Guys are hurt. They got to get them ready. The injury report, the coaching staff deciding, what are you going to do? We're going to trap. We're going to let them go. We're going to switch. What are we going to do? We're going to double the post. What offense is best? All that stuff is all the stuff. And then in the back of your mind, you're going, damn, if we don't win this series, we all might not have a job next week. So we better win this series, because we know the general manager's not on our side. Or the owner wants to make moves. And, you know, he's the guy, the owner that owns Dairy Queens or whatever. And, you know, if he doesn't like the flavor of ice cream, he's going to change it all. And that's, we're the ice cream. So all that goes on.
Hey, Mo, let's get to some of these series. Tipping off tonight, this is an old school rivalry that you know a lot about, and your teams were part of that trifecta, Philly, Boston, Milwaukee back in the day. The Sixers versus the Celtics. We tip off tonight, 7:30 in Boston. It doesn't look like Embiid's going to play tonight. Your thoughts on not only tonight's game, but the series? I can't see it. Availability.
That was my word over the last week, right? Availability. And unfortunately for Philly, Embiid probably not going to play tonight. They don't know for sure. Obviously he's, you know, one of the biggest factors of that team, MVP, might even get it, might be named this week or something, I heard, and he might get it. So obviously that hurts their whole team. But what it does to me is interesting. Like, so let's think outside the box, right? So I'm Doc Rivers and that coaching staff. So we don't have Embiid. So when we play and we're a good team, and B touches the ball 60, 70% of the time. He scores, and he's a good passer and all that. But guess what? We're a pretty damn slow team when he plays, right? We got to wait for him to get down the floor. We got to get the ball. He's going to square up. So now if he's out, we have the horses to go quickly. And what that does, if I'm the coaching staff, I'm saying, you know what? We don't have a B. We have Harden, who's becoming a passer, leading the league in assists. That's good. But we also have this guy called Maxey. Now, he's a super player. He's one of the best young players in the league. And when he has the ball in his hands, he's electric. So I'm going to say, you know, why don't we push the ball with Maxey? You know, Tobias Harris is going to become more of a factor. We're going to involve some of the younger guys with younger legs. And you know what? It's going to be hard to win without Embiid, but guess what? What are the Celtics coaching staff thinking? We just prepared for a series in game one. How are we going to double Embiid? Are we going to trap Embiid? Are we going to try to foul Embiid? What are we going to do with Embiid? Embiid, Embiid, Embiid. That's in their sky report. And now there's no Embiid. So now we got to decide, are they going to run? Is transition going to become more important? We don't have to worry about traps anymore, right? All this stuff is playing with them. So, you know, I think it's – I have it down as a good series, but, I mean, the way the Celtics are playing, how deep they are, Tatum and Brown, you know, in the backcourt, they have Williams, the third back, protecting the rim, you know, and now with Embiid's injury, you know, originally I had it going 6 or 7. This series might just be 5. And Boston gets through Philly more quickly than I thought. And Philly's not a very deep team either. They have a lot of talent. They have some young players. But they're nowhere. I mean, if you're looking at the Celtics, you got Tatum, you got Brown, you got Marcus Smart, Derek White, and Williams III. Then you got Brogdon, Horford, Grant Williams, Muscala, Blake Griffin all off the bench. You know, so to me, that was a 5, maybe 6-game series with Boston coming out on top and waiting for the winner of the Heat Knicks and being really, really happy that they don't have to face the Bucks in the East Finals.
Absolutely. Our buddy Jared Wilder's check says, time for Harden to earn his pay with Embiid out. He needs to step up, as well as Maxey, who you just talked about.
Yeah,
totally agree with you there, Jared.
Well, Jared, I would caution against that because over the years, you know, Harden was the primary ball handler. He was the leading scorer on all his teams. But this year, to his credit, he's taken more of a back seat, and now he averages 11 assists a game, which leads the league. So he's morphed into more of a passer than a scorer. Now, he can score at times. But I would caution him and Philly to say, okay, hey, guess what? We need 35 from you tonight because that ain't going to happen. So Maxey, Tobias Harris, those guys are the ones I would push to. They're going to get more minutes and they're going to handle the ball more. Those are the guys I would push to step up. And Harden, you keep doing what you've been doing and be more of a distributor now because, you know, you have Harden. If Harden starts dribbling 20 times and step back, 8 foot step, eight step step backs and doing all that stuff, and Maxey and those guys are just standing around going, what do we do now? Derek might get swept out of this series. So I would caution against Harden stepping up.
But even with Embiid out, you wouldn't want him to push it a little bit?
A little bit, but I'm not. No, I mean he's averaging 21 points a game.
Right.
21 points a game, 6 rebounds, 11 assists. So great. You're going to get some more shots because Embiid is out. So, you know, that 21 turns into 25. We don't need 40 from you. We don't need that. We don't need 40. Sure, you're going to get more shots because Embiid's out. That's only natural. So is everybody. But I would say, hey, it's time for you to step up. Let's get back to scoring. You know, I would err along the let's see if we can get guys involved early, and then we'll see how it goes in the second half. And then, you know, if it comes down to it, we need some big shots, then you need to be there for them.
Yeah, and I think Jared's thinking along the lines with you. Not so much scoring, but strong overall. What I don't want to see is jacking up shots.
Yeah. The problem is, Jared, that Harden's one of the worst defenders I've ever seen in the history of the NBA.
Come on, man.
So he is, man. Come on. You see the clips. He was standing there, don't know where his man is. So unfortunately, he can't step up defensively. Now he can step up rebounding wise because he's a guy that's averaged 10 rebounds a game, even though he's older. But, you know, mix it up. And hey, instead of your 6 rebounds, we need you. Let's get up to that 10 again. And instead of 11 assists, Let's see if we can get that up to 15 or something. And now we got a chance. So it'll be interesting. It's going to be an interesting game.
Hey, going back to Steph for a minute, I'm with you, Chris. How about Steph Curry missing both free throws in a game yesterday? And that was kind of early on. I'm saying, oh, man, they're not going to win. Steph's out here missing free throws.
Yeah, that's a
– he kind of made up for that.
It surprised me, too. But here's what goes through a guy's mind. Let me put this in your mind. So Steph's a very good free throw shooter, right? I don't know if it's 80% or whatever. So now early in the game, he's missing free throws. And what he says is, damn it, get your head together. Get focused. Get in this game. Can't miss those easy free throws. And that might get his engine going. So he gets fitty.
Fitty.
You got fitty.
Jared is right. He said, I already lost points with me if he can't play defense. He knows how I roll when it comes to defense and hustle. That is Jared for sure.
I don't think I played with many. Maybe on my bad team, maybe in Cleveland early on or somewhere. Hey, you know what? I got 25. Yeah, but the guy guarding got 30. The guy you were guarding got 30.
Absolutely. But your thoughts beyond tonight in this series, Mo?
Well, like I said, Philly's not going to win the series without Embiid. And it's somewhat healthy, he's not going to be 100%. Most guys playing right now aren't 100% that play at that level, starters. Role guys can be 100%, but most starters in the playoffs right now, they played 82 games, now they played another 10 or 12, whatever, 8, whatever. They're not healthy, but Embiid has to be healthy enough where not only to score, but he's a really good passer. And he can rebound and block shots. He needs to be physically healthy enough to do that. Not at the highest level, probably, because it's going to take time. If I don't know what his injury is, but if he doesn't come back, it could be a sweep or a gentleman's sweep. But even if he does come back and he's not, if he's not in 80% healthy-wise, it could be a gentleman's sweep. The more I look at this series, Boston's on a roll. They got focus. They have every position covered. Tatum and Brown are two of the most dynamic backcourt in the league, and they have home court. So I was excited to see this series before all this, and hopefully that they would face the Bucks and beat each other up. But I don't think that's going to happen. But you never know. I mean, the NBA now, Boston falls asleep and gives away one of the first two games, and now crazy things can happen. So I'm interested to see how Philly plays tonight. Do they play more up-tempo? Do they attack the rim more? It's going to be interesting because it's going to give Boston a different look if they don't have Embiid.
Now, I read that Embiid did take part in shoot-around today. Does that tell you anything? I know what you think about shoot arounds.
He put his shoes on, he shot a couple of shots, and then he went back in the locker room. That's what he did. So, I mean, in my day, even if you weren't gonna play and you could hardly walk, Nelly would have you out there at shoot around. Because then the other team's going, well, we gotta prepare for him. So and so is gonna play tonight. And but knowing very well that guy's not gonna play tonight. So that's a mental trick you can use. I don't know if coaching staffs and teams are wily enough or smart enough to do that anymore. But if you're the Celtics, you are preparing for Embiid to play. You can't get fooled by that either. That's been done too before. I mean, that shoot around, your best player is limping all over the place. And guess who sees that? The coaching staff, the scouts, damn, he's hurting. And then he comes in the game and he ain't got no limp.
He's brand new. When you were talking about coaches losing their voice and their influence, I thought about Trae Young and Nate McMillan and that whole shoot around thing. Trae broke the rule. If you don't play from the shoot around, if you don't take part in the shoot around, you can't play.
It's not Nate's rule. It's the team rule.
It's the team rule.
It's the team rule. It wasn't even Nate's rule.
And it's no coincidence 3 weeks later he was gone. 2 weeks later he was gone.
Absolutely. No question. People don't understand how the NBA works. They see it as this entity and this thing, and it doesn't work that way. I mean, you could let's rewind a little bit. Last the Kings Warriors game, I didn't really notice it during the game, but it's been pointed out how Poole has been acting in the huddles and to some of his teammates is not in the best manner. And in my opinion, in the last series, or in the series early on, when I watched him on the bench, he wasn't playing as much, and he was acting kind of goofy, and I think he egged Draymond Green on a little bit, and you know, I don't know, that stuff plays in a seven-game series that it comes to the forefront, and you know, there's a lot of different things that go on behind the scenes that people don't see that play into the ability to win a series or lose a series.
Hey, Chris just asked this question. You think Philly can beat the Heat if they happen to meet up?
That's if the Heat wins, right?
Right.
Which, Chris, I think they will because they're on a roll, and the Knicks with Randall out are struggling. So I think the Heat, if Embiid is healthy, sure, it would be a good series. But if Embiid is still impaired, I think it would be, it'd be a good series either way. But what I think is going to happen is Boston's going to win in 4 or 5, at the most 6, and then Boston series against Miami, if Miami wins, maybe go 6, maybe.
Hey, here's from Jerry. Good info, Coach Moore. I have to get back to work plus watch the video of today's lunchtime basketball. A few guys were playing defense, and I need to get called out again on Wednesday.
Hey, nobody plays defense at lunchtime, man.
Only Jared. Jared actually did. That's what I always wanted on my
team. Oh, did he? Then Jared, you're the guy I would pick on my team every time. I want you on my
team.
Especially if you pass the ball to me, too.
Thanks for checking in, Jared. We certainly appreciate you, brother. That's for sure. Let's get to the other game tonight. And game two tonight, Denver and Phoenix. Mo, I was surprised at how easily Denver handled Phoenix the other night. And Chris Paul just looks 37, 30. You know, LeBron does not look 38. He's the LeBron of 28, but he still is a, athletic, physical guy. And maybe that's because he's 6'9", 250. But Chris just could not keep up with Devin Booker.
Yeah, I mean, and, there's no excuses or anything, but if you watch the games, you see the numbers on the free throw line, right, that are etched in the free throw line?
Yeah.
It's the elevation of Denver. It's high altitude. That's what those numbers are. It's the altitude of Denver, mile high. So, they want to remind you all the time. And guess what? If you're older like Chris Paul, and it's like that's going to affect you more. And, in the long run. And I think I talked about this the other day, I think. When I play in altitude, if you're in the NBA, If you can't get to the Denver at least three days before to get used to it, it's better just to come the day of the game and just fight through it. That's what my recollection was, and I think they came a day and a half before anyway, so that'll have an effect. And also, Denver's been a good team all year. Murray is back, obviously, and guess who stepped up? Caldwell Pope and Aaron Gordon. Aaron Gordon, they both stepped up big, and Michael Porter Jr. So, you got Murray and you got the Joker, and then those guys step up. You're going to be a tough out. It really surprised me how easily they beat the Suns, though. But we said this all along, right? When they made that trade to get KD, they got one of the best starting five in the league. Chris Paul, Booker, KD, Ayton, and then Mikal Bridges. So that's one of the, but they don't have that much of a bench. And that's going to hurt them in a seven-game series. I would hope they'd show some more fight in game two, though, you know?
Hey, Mo, what is it about running around in the mile high as a player? Do you remember? I mean,
well, you can't breathe. I mean, when you're playing there, and back when I played, you know, Denver Nuggets were a running gun team, you know, with Dan Issel, Mickey Vandeweghe, and Fats Lieber. Oh, they were running gun.
Who was the coach? Mo? Coach Mo?
I think Mo was the coach, I think.
Dirk Mo, yeah.
Yeah, but they were running guns, so you coming in there knowing, hey, and the best players on your team, they know they're going to score 30 or 40. But you're going to have to run, and you got to keep up with them, and you're going to run out of breath. I mean, I remember one, I think, you know, Brian Winters had 40, and Sidney Moncrief had 35, and somebody else had 40, but they had guys the same way. And I remember during that game, you know, in late in quarters, refs are calling fouls that aren't fouls. And I'm like, you know, that wasn't a foul. And the refs like, I know. I just had to catch my breath. So, I mean, it's, you know, you try to get it out of your mind, but obviously Denver had, look at the free throw line when you watch the game. That's what those numbers are. And they have that in the locker room. They have it in the hallway. You have mile high level now. You know, here's oxygen if you need it. You know, that plays in your head.
Wow. How do you see this series?
I would think, even though that Denver handled them, you know, easily, even if they handle them easily this game, I could see Phoenix going back to Phoenix and winning two in Phoenix, right? Because you got KD, you got Booker. Chris Paul plays better at home as long as he stays healthy. Ayton needs to step up and rebound more like Looney does. But I can see them winning two in Phoenix and come back tied up to Denver. So I see this, I still see this series as going seven.
Seven games, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm with you there, Mo. Seven game series there. And going back to the East, the Knicks, I tell you, it was fun to hear the Garden rocking. Man, it's been a while, Paul, since they've had some excitement at the Garden. And the place was rocking until Jimmy Butler got going again. And the Heat are on a roll. And think about it. They lost their first play-in game, I think, to Atlanta.
Yeah.
Since that game, they have really kicked it into gear.
And actually, they remind me of a team a few years ago, Atlanta, that did the same thing, right?
Yeah.
They got on a roll late, and then, you know, they got on a roll at the right time. Miami's in the same situation, and Atlanta ended up losing to Milwaukee. But, you know, they're in the same boat. And there's so much talent in the NBA. It's true. When you get on a run and guys get confident and are knocking down shots and, you know, you kind of feel like we're going to win this game no matter what, you know, you can go on a long run and this is the right time for Miami. Remember early on in the year, I picked Miami to do well. And then halfway through, I'm like, what happened to Miami? Well, we're finding out that they have talent and they can play, they have a good coach, and that they're doing damage and they're on a roll at the right time. Now, you know, the Knicks with Brunson and Barrett, you know, they got a great, you know, backcourt, and Josh Hart, they're playing well, but they might not even win a game unless Julius Randle can play. And, you know, his ankle was turned, so availability. So, you know, that's, I was looking for, you know, a better series, but if Randle's not back. But again, this is just one game.
And you know, Butler kind of turned his ankle a little bit.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I got a feeling he's going to be on the court. I mean, he is quite a competitor, Mo.
And how about Love stepping up at 107 with his gray hair?
Yeah, but I remember that trade. You liked that trade when they got him.
Yeah, he picked up a veteran guy that's been there and didn't accept his role. and can shoot and rebound, do a lot of things. And he's filling that role right now at the perfect time. That was a great pickup by them.
Yeah, and Lowry's playing solid basketball. Guy who knows about winning.
They also picked up Zeller, a serviceable big, and they got Martin off the bench, who's a 6'8 athletic guy. And then Strauss can shoot the ball, and he's got a kind of edge to him, right? You know, and that makes him dangerous. And Bam Adebayo is playing great. I mean, they're on a roll at the right time, and they're meeting the right team, right? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, they're meeting the right team at the right time. You know, quite frankly, I think the Cavs might have been a better matchup for the Heat. So they're not. They were pretty happy to see the Knicks beat the Cavs in their coach's room, I'll tell you that.
Were you surprised they dispatched Cleveland 4-1? I was.
Yeah, but then they talk about them. Immature. They're immature. They have some good young talent. They're not very deep, and they don't have any experience. That's a chemistry for disaster right now, you know. But hopefully they'll add a couple pieces and get deeper and mature, you know. But you know, anything can happen to them when you find anyone needs to get a team that's on a roll.
Speaking of immature, we hadn't been on since the Lakers closed that series out against Memphis, but that's the most immature basketball team I've seen in a while.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, you know, selling wolf tickets, that's what we call it. I mean, you're talking the talk, but you never walk the walk. Or are you walking the walk? I mean, it's just so, young mentality, right? Everything has to be immediate. You don't have to work for it. You should be able to talk trash no matter what. You know, you should poke the bear and tell the Warriors the dynasty is over and we're the dynasty when you haven't even won a series yet. You know, all that stupid stuff that came up just killed them. And, you know, Steven Adams being out, and they had another player that was out, one of their third leading scorers. Yeah, so that had – but in the long run, you're gonna collapse in the first round of the playoffs next year unless you grow up. You need to grow up. You know, Dylan Brooks, grow up. Ja Morant, grow up. And I don't know if they will grow up unless coaching staff or some veteran player or someone starts holding them accountable and telling, you know what, we should probably work more and talk less. How about that? We need less of this and more of that. That's what we need. I told players that. That's what less of this, more of this, and listen.
Yeah, Steve showed I'm late, still crying books.
So am I, man.
Mo kind of touched on that, and there are going to be some consequences for that, losing that series, you think, right, Mo?
I think there's going to be roster changes and more than likely coaching changes, and I hope they don't do what most NBA teams do. When they struggle, they let go a couple assistant coaches that had nothing to do with what was going on. So if they're going to make coaching changes, you know, and I'm not advocating this, I don't want to lose a job, but if you're going to make a coaching change, make a coaching change, and that means the head coach.
Yeah. Hey, Mo, we're running out of time. A couple other things I want to run. Well, one thing I want to get your thoughts on the Lakers Golden State series. Two of the greatest players of this era, and LeBron's been in a couple of eras now. Thoughts on this series. The Lakers so surprised by how they – because usually you don't turn a season around after a trade. That's a rarity to see that, isn't it?
Unless it's the right trade. And I talked years about Westbrook is not a fit. He doesn't fit in with what's going on. So that was getting better by elimination of somebody. And then they made some trades to get some younger role players that will accept their roles and are better defenders.
Vanderbilt.
And shoot better. So, you know, So Dennis Schroeder is stepping up and doing his thing. Austin Reaves is having a phenomenal year. Love his play. D'Angelo Russell is like this. He's up and down. He give you 30 and they give you 7. So that's a big question mark. But that was a good move to bring him on. I would rather have him on my team than Westbrook. So LeBron is LeBron. AD is AD if he's healthy. They picked up Vanderbilt, Hachimura, and Beasley, who are great role players. So they're a better team. And I think I saw a stat. They're like, since the trade, they're like 25-4 or something since that trade. Yeah. So they're on a roll. However, if you're looking at the series, I'm looking at the Warriors' last dance. That's what I'll call it. And with Curry, Clay, Poole, Draymond Green, Looney, DiVincenzo, Kuminga, Wiggins, Peyton III, they got healthy. I think they're deeper than the Lakers, but it's going to come to who steps up and who's available. If AD stays healthy and plays the way he can play, I might give the edge to the Lakers. But right now it's a toss-up, and maybe the edge to the Warriors. So it's going to be an interesting series.
Probably 7 games.
Yeah, and here's what could happen. When do they play? Tomorrow?
Tomorrow night, yeah.
That could be a blowout. The Lakers could blow them out by 30. Easy. Because they, because the Warriors just got off a 7-game, game 7. You know, they went through all that. The Lakers have been resting, and now the Warriors go into L.A. And try to step up. But they know. You know what happens? You win games.
The Lakers are going to San Francisco.
Oh, they're going to San Francisco, so that helps them because they play better. But what happens in the series is battle the series, you battle. We're down 2. We're up 1. Now we won the series in game 7, and now we go down to game 1. And the importance of game 1 doesn't seem that much important anymore, right? You just have to do it down there. And now you got game. You know what? If we lose this game, we'll win game 2. You know, no problem. But you know what? I was wrong. Thanks for it's in Golden State, so a blowout is less likely for the Lakers. But I wouldn't be surprised. You know, they could win by 10, 15. You don't know.
I think both those teams can win on each other's home court.
Oh, for sure.
Because they with the veterans they had.
Yeah. Well, I think, like the Warriors, the worst road record in the league, but then step up and win 2 in Sacramento. So, you know, maybe they got that. Maybe they're eating the right pregame meal or getting the right warm-up or watching the right tape before the road games now.
Steve says, I think it would be Nuggets versus Boston.
Could be. I think Boston, I think for sure, now that my beloved Bucks are out, and Denver definitely could win. But I wouldn't be past. I don't think the Lakers can beat Denver, but I think Golden State can.
Hey, Mo, before we get out of here, and terrible news for Oakland A's fans. And you played in the Bay Area. You know that area very well. The A's are heading to Vegas to join the Raiders there, giving your town NFL, NHL, Major League Baseball franchises, plus a WNBA franchise. And you have been saying this for a couple of years now. It's only a matter of time before the NBA. Does that just make you even more sure when you see the A's coming?
Well, actually not. I think that deters a little bit because to support a baseball team, you know, there's 81 home games. Hockey, basketball, there's 41. NFL, there's 10,
8 or 9.
I don't know if Vegas is a big enough market to support 81 home games. However, especially with a bad team, right? They're bad, right? So, but someone pointed it out to me that people here are going to buy season tickets to see the other teams. You know, the Dodgers, the Angels, the Reds, the whatever they are, to see the other teams. And we're a destination city, so, you know, if the Milwaukee Brewers come and play the A's, you know, they're going to have fans come and stay for the 4 days and enjoy Vegas. So, you know, the thing is, the deal's not done yet. what was done was a commitment to buy the land, which is by, it's kind of a triangle between Allegiant Stadium and the arena. So it's kind of a unique area. They've already cleared it out. I was by there yesterday. But it's not a done deal with the team, I don't think. Pretty much it is. But it was funny because on the news last night, you know, people went to the game in Oakland, A's game, and protested the A's leaving, you know, about 50 people. And our camera in Vegas scanned the rest of the crowd and said, you know, that's interesting, but there's only 11,000 people at the game. That's not a good, you know.
No. So but we'll keep an eye on that, Ma. It is another fast-paced hour. Man, we certainly appreciate everybody's questions and comments. People, go back to work, everybody. Y'all been goofing off the last hour with us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, invite some friends for next week, for sure.
Absolutely. For Big Mo, Paul McKeskey, I'm Rick Hampton. We'll see you next Monday. We'll probably be at our regular time next Monday and have a lot to talk about. Take care, everybody. Peace.
Peace out.